As I mentioned before, we're in Matthew's telling, one of Jesus' followers, one of Matthew's retelling of the good news of Jesus. I think it's important to keep that these books are called Gospels on purpose because they talk about good news about who Jesus is in the Sermon on the Mount. And it's an extensive, extended period of teaching that Jesus has that he lays out for his followers. But I really appreciated how Todd, I think, captured the beginning of this message 2 weeks ago when he said that it's almost as if when we hear about Jesus beginning this in Matthew 5, and it says, "Now, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and he sat down. His disciples came to him and he began to teach them." And I think Todd caught it when he said it's like Jesus sat down. Got to see Jeannie and Heather. And Karen. He sits down. I'll find my place later. He sits down. He takes a deep breath. He looks us in the eye. And he says, "Are you listening to me?" So I'd like you to imagine that you're in this chair. And Jesus has just sat down. He's taken a deep breath. And he said, "Are you listening to me?" The context that Todd spoke of was a physical exam where a doctor sat down in front of him and said, are you really listening to me, Todd? And it occurred to me, I got to tell you a story that illustrates Todd was not listening to that doctor. That visit was like a couple years ago. Just a little over 2 months ago, Todd wrestled in an open tournament. 50-some-year-old man. In an open wrestling tournament down in Winchester against 20-year-olds, against 25-year-olds, against college wrestlers. And he held his own. But what he tells you at the end, after the second match, he's on the bottom, it's toward the end of the third period, no pin, he is still going at it. The referee gets down in front of Todd and goes, "You know, you really got to give this up sometime." After the match was over, the scorer's table gave him a standing ovation. When he clicked on the box about the year that you were born to, it didn't go that far. So Todd didn't listen, but we need to listen today to Jesus. I need to listen to Jesus today. When Jesus says, "Are you listening to me? I want to speak to you about your anger. I understand how devastating anger can be. So I have some good news for you today about your anger. Are you listening?" Let's read this in Matthew chapter 5. "You've heard it said to the people long ago, 'You shall not murder.' And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, 'Raca,' is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, 'You fool,' will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, If you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go, be reconciled to them, and then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny. One of the things I hear Jesus saying when he says, I want to talk to you about your anger, I hear him say, take out your note page. Do you have a bulletin? Take your note page out and turn it over. I hear Jesus say, your pastor's put some great thoughts on this paper. Listen to him. We are focusing on how to connect and have the life of Jesus flow more deeply and really and strongly through our lives. That's why we call this Our Roots Are Going Deep. But we want our roots to go deeper for purposes that I think God has laid out. And Jesus, I think, is saying to us today, I want to speak to you about your anger because I want to shape your character. I want your character to be shaped by me, not by your anger. So that's the first, these are five reasons why I think you want to listen to Jesus today. You really do. I really do. Because I want my character and how I respond in anger or not to be shaped by Jesus. Because I want how I respond to anger to actually strengthen relationships. Number two, up there at the top, our hope. That how we deal with anger in our lives strengthens our marriages, doesn't dissolve them. It strengthens our relationship with our children, doesn't bring more tension into it. It strengthens our relationship with our parents. It strengthens our relationships at work. It strengthens our relationships, how we deal with anger. Second benefit, third benefit, why how we deal with anger helps us weather storms. If we go through storms angry, that's one response. It's not the best response. We will weather storms better if Jesus shapes how we deal with anger. It will also impact our legacy. How we deal with anger defines much of what is passed on to those people that are influenced by us. It impacts them. It affects them, how we deal with anger. So it affects the impact of our lives and those generations that will come. Will they be marked by being angry people, or will they be marked by people that know how to forgive and know the grace of forgiveness? And that also, how we deal with anger bears fruit in our world, in our neighborhoods, in our relationships, in the mission fields that God has called us to go to. Maybe it's not Japan, but it is something around here where we work, where we live. Five reasons I think Jesus says, listen. Three phrases in this story, in this message. Three phrases that Jesus says I think are very important to hang our thoughts on. The first is, you've heard it said. The second phrase in 22, but I tell you. And Jesus is going to set those two in contrast. You've heard it said, but I tell you. And then the third phrase, verse 23, is simply, therefore. You have heard it said, Jesus said, to the people long ago. What Jesus is bringing out here is you've heard it said in the law that the primary fundamental focus of what it means to murder involves external realities. It has to do with what you do externally to other people. If you physically life, that's the old way. Only worrying about the external, what is done outside, and what other people see. You've heard it said, that's the old way. Another way to look at this is how we deal with anger. You've heard it said could be, what have you been taught? What have you been taught about how to deal with anger? What have those in influence in your lives said to you? This is how you get angry. What have you been taught? What have they said, whoever they are, in your story about how to handle anger? They might not have spoken it. The second question is, what was modeled for you? What was the environment like with you growing up and anger? Because that was taught to you that way, without words. You just saw. You heard. This is how you deal with anger. It's been modeled for you one way or the other. Either you were a part of regular blow-ups, or you were a part of a situation that, no, nothing, it just got stuffed. And there was pretending going on, but everybody knew what was going on. What's your story? What have you been taught? What has been modeled? What's your family history? What are your memories? When you think about your story growing up, what are the memories that come to mind about when people got angry? That's, you've heard it said. That's the old way. If it hasn't been marked by Jesus, if it hasn't been good, if the Spirit's saying, oh, this has not been good, this is not right, your story, that's what he's highlighting for you right now. You've heard it said. But then Jesus says, but I tell you, this is my way. This is not the old way. This is not the old way of doing things. This is my way. And my way, Jesus says, does not focus on the externals. It does not focus on actions alone. It does not focus on what other people see. Jesus says, my way of dealing with anger focuses on the interior spaces of our life. My way deals with our emotions, our responses, those things that are internal to our life that characterize our heart and our places in our life that nobody else sees. That's the focus of Jesus when he says, but I tell you. He has a completely different focus. He says, but I tell you that if anyone who is angry with a brother or sister, that's an emotion of the heart. Two primary words in the Greek language for anger. One is characterized by an event that I experienced in the football practice field when I was a senior in high school. Me and my best friend at the time, Jack Stickney, were captains. I had a little bit too puffed up an idea of who I was at that point in time. We're doing a walkthrough on Thursday before the game. We're doing a walkthrough of a punt return. Walkthrough means you don't run hard, it's not hard, that kind of thing. You kind of have an expectation. People have pads. I'm doing a walkthrough, and a freshman bumps me in an unexpected way, and I go down on my back as a senior, as a captain, in a very inglorious way. I was immediately angry, and I still to this day am ashamed and embarrassed by what came out of my mouth. I still remember that. That's one word for anger. It's that quick response. Coffee gets spilled in your lap, and you have a flash response. It's the quick response. The other word for anger, the one that Jesus uses here, is not that word. The word that Jesus uses is that slow, brooding, long-term, simmering anger. That's the word Jesus is using here. If you have this long, simmering anger that does not get dealt with, you will be subject to judgment. Another way to look at it, it will have devastating results. And he says that three different ways. If you say to a brother or sister, raka, the reason why they have raka in here is because the word is almost untranslatable. It has so much to do even with the tone of voice. It's just very difficult, but it has to do with mental capacity. It could be real close to idiot. It could be real close to moron. It could be a term related to someone's mental capacity. If you say that, and keeping in mind that Jesus is focusing on the heart, so it's not even necessarily that it's gotten to the point where you verbalize that word. That's the point. It would be the old way if the only trouble you have with raka and saying fool is when it comes out of your mouth. We're missing the point. Jesus is saying if your unresolved anger, this brooding anger, results in such that in your heart you breathe fool, you breathe idiot to somebody else. Nobody knows that but Jesus. That's what Jesus is getting at. If that's going on, there are devastating consequences to that. He puts it this way in this first one, raka, you'll be answerable to the court. That's the Sanhedrin. That's the Supreme Court. You won't be answerable to the low court, the local courts. You'll be answerable to the Supreme Court. Jesus is using extreme here. And then he says, if you say to anyone, you fool, this has more of a moral implication. You're about somebody's name and their reputation. If something about their name and their reputation goes on because of the anger, you're in danger of the fires of hell. Now, the word in Greek is Gehenna. And when the people of Jerusalem heard Jesus say that phrase, they thought of a place outside of Jerusalem in the southwest part of the city. Because that was the Valley of Hinnom. That was Gehenna. When these people heard that, that's what they thought about. Because that's where King Ahaz burned children back in the day. And it became a trash heap. And it smoldered. And it had fire. And so when these hearers heard Jesus say this, they said, your life is going to look like that if you tolerate fool and idiot in your heart towards someone. That's what your life is going to look like. That's the impact of that anger. Words kill. That's the essence of what Jesus is trying to get across. And not just verbal words. Words in our heart that we speak that no one knows but God, those words kill. That's why there's this juxtaposition against murder. Our words, even mumbled in the recesses of our heart, murder people. They end life. So Jesus says, you've heard it said. Keep in mind, what is the old way? It's important to think about that because that has shaped us. What we've seen, what we've been modeled to, that has shaped us. And Jesus is saying, no, I've got a whole new way. I say to you, be very aware of the internal spaces of your heart, your attitudes that nobody knows but me. Be aware of those. Therefore, here's how I can help you when destructive anger comes. That's how I like to translate that, therefore, if Jesus were speaking to us in a chair. Very important, I think. I can help you We're going to focus on this a little bit more. Some of the places where we have to go with our anger seem insurmountable. And we way too quickly potentially say, no way. It's impossible. Never going to happen. And Jesus says, wait. Don't forget the power that is available to you in me to help you. So that's what Jesus is saying here. Jesus is saying, I can help you deal with destructive anger. Two simple words on this that he uses, remember and reconcile. Remember and reconcile. He says, therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you. You're going through life. You're coming to church. You're just living your life. And all of a sudden, something comes to your mind about an offense, a brokenness. And you remember somebody has something against you. Now, sometimes that memory has great clarity to it. You know exactly what happened, when it happened. You know the words. You know the scenario. It's very clear. Sometimes that's our memory of our history with people and when anger comes up. But that's not always the truth all the time, is it? Sometimes those memories are very complex and murky and difficult to fully understand. We don't get it all. These are the places of our interior lives that are difficult to discern, difficult to sort out. It's murky. Paul alludes to this in 1 Corinthians 4, where he basically says, I don't even trust me to judge my own heart. Check out that first couple verses in 1 Corinthians 4 at some point. Paul says, I need help sometimes in discerning what's going on with my heart. You may need help. Cindy and I were talking about within the past year, me dealing with anger. I wasn't completely understanding it. And her simple, wise encouragement was, get some outside help. And the person we went to, a counselor in this area, was not a stranger to me. I have regularly needed outside help to understand what's going on in my heart. No shame in that. No shame in going to a physical doctor because something's going on physically with you. No shame in going and having somebody help you understand what's going on in your heart, your emotional parts of your life. And he asked me one very insightful question. And often that comes because these people, I would encourage you to go to folks that have something of some insight spiritually, if that works. But he asked me this question. He said, what's the lie that you're believing? What's the lie that you're believing? And all of a sudden some things became very clear to me about why I was getting angry. But I didn't come to myself. Cindy didn't have the ability. She was very much enmeshed in what we were wrestling through, kind of walking through. So sometimes you may need to get outside help to help understand the murkiness when you remember. Reconcile. Be reconciled. He says, first go. If you remember, then he says, first go and be reconciled to them. Then come offer your gift. That's a pretty radical thing to do. That you're preparing to worship. A good thing, a right thing. And Jesus says, boy, if you remember something's not right, he's basically saying, don't be afraid, don't hesitate to do what might appear to be a very radical step. Leave your altar, leave your gift at the altar, leave it there. Walk away, go be reconciled. Work at that. Take the first step. Don't wait. Take the first step. Be reconciled. Don't be overly concerned about who did what to whom and waiting for all that to get settled out. Take the first step. Be reconciled. And then come back and worship. It may be radical. He also says, in verse 25, settle matters quickly. Don't wait. There's a timeliness to this, Jesus says. He understands that the longer unresolved anger, the longer that brokenness resides in our heart, the more dangerous the impact, the more devastating the impact, the more long-term the impact. So settle matters quickly. It might be radical, and it might have to be very, very quick, sooner than you would like. But do it quickly. Do not let this linger. Now, I have cautions. There are some scenarios where it's not this simple. Especially if some scenarios, some anger in your life is related to some abusive situations. There are scenarios in your life that might be producing anger that it would be the wrong thing for you to go directly to that person. Quickly. It may be the exact wrong thing. That's where you need wisdom. And if you're thinking today, if there's some clarity of application that you're thinking, oh yeah, no, that's right, I need to do this. But you're thinking, but on the other hand, you might be thinking, whoa, it doesn't, I can't see me doing that. And my heart's right. It's not like I'm hard-hearted before God saying, no way, God. No, you're saying, I want to, God, but there's something in your heart going, I don't know. That needs some thought and some wisdom. Get input. If you have a caution, do not go back into an abusive, a harmful situation. It may not be at all what God's wisdom is saying for you to do. So how does this happen? Take this note page back out again on the back side if you already have it. If you've been taking rigorous notes, take a minute and break. The reason I'm doing this is because this is important. It's not just words on a page. I want you to look at just below our hope on the backside. Look at four ways to get the most out of this year. There's some significant things here. One is commit to knowing the stories. Be here regularly, as often as you can, to hear the true stories of how Jesus shapes character. The second is habits. Develop spiritual disciplines. Think about what are the patterns that God is changing in you so that you handle anger differently and better. In the book that we're walking through, this whole thing, The Good and Beautiful Life, there's five copies left out there. I encourage you to pick one up if you haven't already, because the stories and the input that he has is very, very helpful. But the soul training exercise he encourages for this week is fascinating to me, and it's Sabbath. One of the most helpful things you and I can do in our wrestling with anger is to make sure and take regular breaks of being quiet before God and resting and stopping the normal pace of our life so that God can speak to us about our anger and about His forgiveness and His ability to do the impossible through us because He lives in us. So that's why Sabbath is so important. But then we can't do this alone. If you're trying to do some of this as a lone ranger, it's not the way of God. Do it with friends. Involve yourself in something of a friendship intentionally with someone that can walk with you, encourage you, pray with you about this. And then lastly, remember the Holy Spirit. It's what we've talked about already. This is impossible to do on our own energy. It's got to be done by the power of God. We have two. Tamara, I don't know if you heard, but you're going first. Tamara has some encouragements to you to think about on this May Ministry Month, and then we're going to close with a video about the children's ministry and opportunities there. Thanks, Tamara.